at some point. Now we're hearing that Robusta, and it is being pushed in the country, in Peru, that we
by
should plant more
Robusta. Who's pushing it? The government.
Roasters.
Oh, roasters.
Of course, the other side of the business. So, they want cheaper coffee.
Okay. So now I'm getting a clearer picture.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapa Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapaforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details.
Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapa Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode one of a brand new series on the Daily Coffee Pro. We have a first-time guest, Mark Bolliger from Finca Rosenheim in Peru. Mark, welcome to the podcast for the first time.
Thank you.
It is going to be an interesting discussion. We are having this discussion because of a number of things. This is coming out the week after the series with Madeline Longoria Garcia, who I had a very deep conversation with, a very intense conversation with, about the conversations that we're not having in the industry. And as I was reflecting on the feedback that I'm getting from that series, I started to realize that, you know what, we're not asking the right questions to producers. We're not giving producers an opportunity to have a say. And that would be unfair to say that. We have lots of producers on this podcast, but we're not asking them some of the questions that we got really upset about during the series with Madeline. So Mark and I came across each other, and I saw your Instagram, and big shout out to Kat Melheim, because Kat had reposted something that you were doing.
Yeah.
And I reached out to Kat and said, do you know this guy? Like, should I have him on the podcast? She's like, you should totally check out his content. So shout out to Kat, big fan of Kat. And so I reached out to you, and now we're having this conversation. So Mark, why don't you tell people who you are and what you do, and then we're going to get stuck into the discussion.
Okay. My name is Mark. I'm a coffee producer. I lead a farm in central Peru called Finca Rosenheim. We have around 40 hectares of coffee, and we export our coffee directly. That's what we do.
Super easy. Super straightforward. And when you and I had the prelim conversation, you were saying to me, look, Lee, you know, I feel like there are people who deserve more of an opportunity to have this discussion than I do. And you were like, I'm a producer that comes with a lot of privilege, and I don't want to feel like I'm – so all the stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so before anyone gets on Instagram and starts saying a whole bunch of shit about that, we come to this conversation aware – that's the starting point. We are having these conversations throughout the rest of this year with all kinds of producers, because these are the questions that all kinds of producers need to be kind of sharing their thoughts on. Furthermore, I am in a position where I don't speak Spanish, and you as an audience member, the majority of you don't understand Spanish. And so if I am going to have conversations with people, it needs to be in a way that I can understand it and I can have the conversation. And it just so happens that Mark happened to be in a privileged position where he was posting on Instagram because he has the privilege of doing that, and it captured my attention. And now I want to have an intelligent conversation with him about it. And he comes from the perspective of already knowing that he comes from a position of privilege, which means he's the kind of producer that can have a voice for people who don't get this opportunity. That's the starting point for our conversation. Having said that, the theme for this series is the reality of being a coffee producer today. And even as we were putting together the way that we were going to have this series, Mark was saying to me, but, you know, like all producers are different and I'm not the only, like I'm not the typical kind of producer in Peru. I'm like, I get that. But there is a lot of different ways of being a coffee producer today, and that doesn't invalidate the way that you're a coffee producer. So let's have a conversation. And throughout this series, we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. We're going to be talking about power dynamics. We're going to be talking about why you should be traveling to Origin more and what it means to producers. We're going to be talking, like, throughout this series, we're going to be having these conversations. But today, we are going to be talking about the confusion that coffee producers face today compared to perhaps their ancestors. Perhaps the generations before them were kind of just being coffee producers and then selling their coffee. There are a lot more challenging dynamics in the supply chain that are leaving producers very confused about what they should be doing and what the market wants and all that kind of stuff. Am I right there, Mark?
Yes. And now you say it like that also, I think the trends on how producers have changed the way they produce coffee in the past. So for example, I think here in Villarrica, where I am, how the focus on specialty coffee or just producing volume, how that changed. At some point, it was just good prices and not so many demands from the market. So It just made more sense for producers to just do more volume, just do it faster. Doesn't matter. Don't ferment your coffee. Just process it right away. And many got stuck on that. And then
what
when
do you
the
mean
market
by
has
stuck?
Changed,
what do you mean by stuck?
Like, for example, I'm thinking about this one neighbor, and he got into producing coffee. Like, he's, I don't know, second generation producing coffee. At some point, he just stopped paying too much attention on his beneficium. So he just got all the machines to work the most efficient way possible, just mixing, just getting coffee that had high yield. And at some point, the market now wants specialties. Especially now that when the prices have been low, You can differentiate your coffee if you have something special. And they were stuck on producing just volume. And it's not that they can change from one year to another, right? So this producer at some point was just selling his coffee, how do you call this? Just after being harvested?
Strip picking.
Yeah, just as a cherry. And he was just selling it as a cherry.
Right.
Because it made more sense to him just to not process it, not try to give it some fermentation or try to give some added value. Just sell it as volume.
And this constant, if I'm understanding you correctly, what you're saying is that producers are now in this kind of dance of trying to figure out what the market wants. And
well, the market always wants something different. That's the problem.
Tell me more.
And okay. So the market is always some new hype. For example, you've seen the hype that Geisha has.
Mm-hmm.
And so many producers planted these geisha trees that are, they're such a finicky variety. They need a lot of care. And even me, like I planted geisha and at some point I had to abandon that plantation. Then we had, now it's all about specialty. At some point, now we're hearing that Robusta, and it is being pushed in the country, in Peru, that we
by
should
who?
Plant more Robusta.
Who's pushing it? The government.
Roasters.
Oh, roasters.
Of course, the other side of the business.
So,
they want cheaper coffee.
Okay. So now I'm getting a clearer picture because clearly, in our conversation yesterday, the frustration was really apparent. You've clearly debriefed from that conversation. The frustration's not as present as it was yesterday. And what I'm getting from you is that if I can help people, given what you said to me yesterday, is that you are constantly trying to anticipate as a producer what the roaster wants. And this is not a market. This is not an agricultural product that has like a 90-day cycle where you can just shift things very quickly. You can't be that reactive. It's a much longer cycle to be able, like it's 3 years or so, right? So if you want to be able to adapt to Robusta, you can't just do that 1 year from 1 year to the next. It's an expensive endeavor. It is resource intensive. It's also unfair because what happens to the coffee that you've got in the ground?
Yes. And well, the thing that I told you yesterday,
please.
It's that I went to Guatemala and I went to this fermentation training camp by the CIA Solis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because I met a lot of people and they all brought coffees. And mm-hmm. it was, oh yeah, hey, bring some coffees that you want to share with the group. And this really impacted me because the coffees that I tried there were amazing. There were these things like we were making fun of this, calling it like hyper specialty, ultra specialty. Yes. And I had my coffee, and my coffee is an 84 plus. And I really felt like, oh, oops. Right. They had this, all this coffee tastes like strawberry, and this one like hibiscus, and there are so many crazy things and crazy flavors. And I don't know if that should be the same category as specialty anymore, because I feel less behind. It's like, I have to now, I have to innovate. I have to do some crazy fermentations. I, to be honest, I don't know what I have to do. I will have to, and I enjoy experimenting on my Beneficio, but I really don't know if like the market just goes so fast, so different. And these coffees, I don't know how to reach that. I don't know how to get those flavors.
And this is where the confusion comes, right? Like, you're not just producing the coffee that you want to produce. You're not able to just create coffee and find customers who would like it. You now are getting told from people or from the market that this is what you should be producing, and year on year, that keeps changing.
Yes, and it's, I'm not getting told. I want to stay relevant. I want to stay in business.
Right.
So I'm interested in knowing what the market wants, and I'm trying to stay relevant. We produce our coffee, like our expert quality coffee. I think quality comes from the processes, and I try to have the same taste profile every year. And I know I got the customers for that, and that's our main focus, but I do want to do micro lots. I do want to have naturals. Why? Because people ask me, hey, do you have naturals? Last year, like three buyers asked me, hey, do you have naturals? And I stopped doing naturals a while ago because I couldn't find clients. So
right.
Now I know, okay, maybe this year I'll do naturals again, and I'll hope they'll be able to sell them.
So I want to ask you something on that. When you do something like that and you create naturals, how confident are you that you're going to be able to find clients in this market these days that will buy that coffee?
I think now I have much more chance. And I'll tell you the story of the last time that I did naturals. Doing naturals is, for us especially, because our weather is not good for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work.
Mm.
So I would say this natural coffee that I produced, this was back in 2021, I think. And I produced this coffee, and I was really optimistic, and I had it all milled. I think it's the most expensive coffee that I've produced.
Okay.
And I have only myself to blame because I didn't find a market for it. I don't consider myself a great salesman. So that coffee ended up being roasted, and we gifted it to the harvesters at the end of the harvest, because I couldn't find a market for it. And it was good coffee.
Mm.
Nowadays, I think it's more easy. There's different ways to get to market. I've tried some of them. it's still hard. Like,
yeah.
I've tried this using samples.
Which is an expensive endeavor.
Yes. And if any roaster is out there or coffee buyer, don't those your producers mm-hmm. when they say use samples, please don't. It's really expensive. And if you get the sample and they don't ever answer, that's really shitty to do.
It's really shitty and rude on top of everything.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to blame you for deciding that coffee is not going to be what your customers want. First of all, please don't request samples for the sake of requesting samples.
And always give feedback. Always, yeah. Like, always, if I need that feedback. I've sent samples to people in Switzerland and Germany just to get feedback. I knew that this was not going to be a business, but I said, hey, please tell me what you think. Because here I'm in an ecosystem where I have my coffee cup. It's the people that cup coffee here, like they're tasting that type of coffee all the time. It's not something different for them. They don't know, like they won't appreciate like what I see, for example, my clients in Germany, what they say about my coffee. Mm. They will never say that here. So yeah, it's very valuable to have feedback from those samples. So yeah, now I think I have the tools. I think I have the way to get customers if I do this coffee.
What happens if the coffee doesn't sell?
Well, right now I have.
That's a hard question, and I understand that that's inviting a vulnerability that we don't normally get to see. On the consuming end of the market, is what's the consequence of the shitty behavior if roasters give you as a producer the impression that they want naturals and then you produce the naturals and then the natural doesn't sell? What does that do to you as the owner of the business?
So right now I have 10 bags of this coffee that it has 200 hours of fermentation and that we did on our Beneficio. And it's not just me. It's like with the guys that we work in the Beneficio, that means a lot of extra work. It's like, hey, let's fill these bags and we have to stay later and do a lot of work. And I honestly, right now, I feel ashamed that I still have those bags because I made these people work so hard with me to get that coffee. And now I haven't sold. and it's the story. I was like, I had a client interested in that, and then he said, like, no, I don't want it anymore.
And so it's an honor thing, right? Like a pride thing. You and your team work really hard on it, and they feel proud when the product moves as well, because that's their hand, like their hands and their blood and their sweat and tears go into creating that. And you, as it sounds like from what I'm hearing from you, you want to share that success of the thing that you all created together by selling the coffee.
With my team, it works like that. My foreman and Don Geyser that is working right now in the Beneficio, they all know right now that I'm having an interview with you.
Right.
And that is very important for the farm. So they participate in that. They go, yeah, we understand. It's like me doing videos and they now understand why I do the videos.
Right.
And I've always felt very short on telling them, because it's hard to tell them, hey, smile for the camera, because I don't want to exploit them that way. But now I feel it's much more easy because they themselves now have they have phones. And for example, Doña Celia, she follows me and I get to tag her and I get her likes. So it's the same people that are here working. And so it's easier now for me to tell them, hey, Eddie, you have the t-shirt for the Cinca, from the Cinca right now. Can I film you? And yeah, so it's easier. And I tell them because I need to feel, that's my ego. I need to feel myself validated that we're a team. And my job is not harvest, not shovel coffee. It's marketing and finances and administration, right? And yeah, I'm the mechanic. So that's part of what I do. So I tell them, hey guys, I'm doing this. And they go like, yeah. So right now,
everyone plays
for example,
their role. Everyone plays their role.
Everyone plays their role.
And when the coffee doesn't move, that's I guess, yeah. Soul, it sounds like it's soul-destroying for everybody. Everyone feels invalidated as opposed to successful and feels rewarded.
Especially with these micrologs, because last year was the first time that I got to sell all the micrologs that I made, all this special coffee. And it is more work involved on that. And it is something that we choose to do in the Beneficio when we're processing our coffee. It's like, should we do this? And honestly, it's Don Geisa that works with me is that says, let's do it. And it's, okay, we'll do it. Perfect. We'll do it. And in this case, then you're asking me why, like the worst part of having that coffee there is all the effort that went to it and that I haven't been able to sell it. Yeah.
Okay.
It feels
what?
Feels fat.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't mean to pull that out of you. I'm sorry. I thought I cut you off. I'm going to ask a silly question. Please forgive me. Beneficio. What does that mean?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Beneficio is our wet processing plant where we process the coffee every day after the harvest. It's called Beneficio because it gives added value to the coffee.
Oh, benefit. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So it okay, great, fantastic. I'm here to ask the silly questions because
it's
everybody
perfect.
At home is thinking of it.
You know what other places are called beneficios?
No.
Where cattle is processed for meat.
Excellent.
That's also that's the only other place that I know it's called beneficio.
Okay. Go team. I'm a vegan. That was fantastic. Okay, so
one fact,
which leads us perfectly into what the next episode is going to be about, which is the power dynamic between producers and roasters. So join us for the next episode, folks. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.